minutes, 6 past the hour here on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition.
Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, lurking conservatives. Good morning to the fellas at Marino's and Sons Fish in Astoria, Queens, who set me up with some wild king salmon yesterday.
Uh-oh.
You know what, dude, the weird thing is one of the guys, he wants to get into booking the show now. Of course, there's a relationship developing. He's like, you ought to have this guy on, you know.
Who, Peter Malone?
I'm not going to bring up the guy because I did some research on the guy, and the guy's got a shady past, this guy. He's an infomercial cat.
Oh.
So I'm not going to give him any free publicity.
I thought it was Johnny K Street.
No. It's some guy named Kevin Trudeau. Cures they do. Cures they don't want you to know about, but I did some research. He's in a lawsuit with the government or something.
Cures?
But it's interesting because, you know, I think the guy at Marino's, his heart's in the right place. You know,
yeah.
he wants to unveil some government deviousness in terms of health cures, and I'm there to get salmon for my health. I'm on the salmon and cantaloupe thing now.
Salmon and cantaloupe?
Yeah, don't you remember last year there was a big thing about salmon and cantaloupe? It's a good diet for your skin and everything else. It's something I like to eat anyways. I woke up feeling nauseous, Riley.
I know, man. What's up? Well, salmon and cantaloupe is no wonder.
What are you talking about? How could that be bad? It's good for your skin. Look at my skin. Don't I look youthful and healthy? Come on, Kayla, look at me. Huh? Look at how good I look. Come on, say it. Say I look great. My hair's getting a little out of control. I'm a little worried about that. We're going to be at the Strand. I'm going to be at the Strand. Apparently, Riley's going to be in Disney World tomorrow.
Yep.
But I'll be at the Strand from 6 to 9 in the morning. It's the Strand Bookstore at the corner of Broadway and 12th Street. We're going to have playwright and actor Eric Bogosian, New York City mayoral candidate Chief Virginia Fields. Many others. Jim David's going to be there. Comedian Jim David. If you don't know Jim David, he's also a columnist for The Advocate. He's a very funny guy. He's going to hang out. Also, you're going to be able to win 2 tickets to see me in New Jersey, Hasbrook Heights, New Jersey. We're going to drive you out there. That's June 25th. If you just want to come see me because you live in the Jersey area, go to bananascomedyclub.com. How's that for the plugs?
There you go.
Now let's get into the hardcore stuff here, Riley. Apparently, the federal government, the Bush administration, wants to take back $44 million from families of 9/11 victims who settled, who got these settlements after 9/11, and apparently the government is saying, well, they didn't get them the right way.
Yeah, there was some paperwork that apparently got messed up there. See, to me, Mark, all of this stuff, with the $125 million that they're trying to take back,
mm-hmm.
with the Olympics, the whole thing, to me, says that America's compassion for New York ended on New Year's Eve 2001. That was it.
Yeah, but what kind of BS is that they're going to take money back because it was distributed through agencies that the New York government thought would be more efficient to get to the people, to the victims of 9/11. Now the General Accountability Office is saying that, it's not the right way to distribute these funds, and because of that, we want you to go get the money back from the victims of 9/11. The NADS of this administration is ridiculous.
This is, failure to follow instructions from Congress. That's supposed to get you a C on a test paper, failure to follow instructions. It's not supposed to take money out of the hands of victims, for God's sake.
That's right. And Tony Blair on Wednesday said he was hoping that he would be able to get George Bush to kick in some dough to help solve this greenhouse gas problem. That's going to end the world. And I guess George Bush said, as soon as I get this $44 million from the victims of 9/11, maybe I can kick into that fund.
Yeah, and only a couple mil, because they got the rest of it's going to his Social Security promotions tour.
Exactly. We'll get into those two stories in just a few minutes. What I want to talk about right now, and I think we should talk about, is all these centrocrats, these fake Democrats, who are piling on Dean. You know, Howard Dean made some statements that were true. They were statements that sort of relate to what Riley and I say here
every morning.
That I guess we could probably hear some of those statements in just a second. You know, why don't we do that? Can we? We don't have any Howard Dean statements, but I can read them.
Read them. Sound like Howard.
I was about to throw to some Howard. I was all excited to hear Howard Dean statements. I'm like, hey, you know what? We don't have them. Well, you know, he's basically said, Dean said, by and large, the Republican Party has the agenda of the conservative Christians. We say that and worse here every morning.
Yep.
This is a diversion. They're catering to the Christian right, Dean, quote, I'm quoting Dean. This is a diversion from the issues that really matter, Social Security and adequate job opportunity, strong public schools, a strong defense, end quote. And I guess that the, you know, he called them, quote, pretty much a white Christian party, end quote. He also made some comments about Republicans not working an honest day in their life. I knew exactly what he was talking about. But now all of a sudden, Biden, Governor Richardson, Bill Richardson out of New Mexico, Nancy Pelosi, who was a little more diplomatic than the rest, are just piling on saying, hey, he doesn't represent our views. Well, I'll tell you what the right reaction to Howard Dean as a Democratic politician is. Oh, yeah, that's Howard. That's it. That's it.
They don't have to go to the lengths that they're going to distance themselves from the chair of the DNC. Each and every one of these people from Richardson on down knows exactly what their public statements mean in the court of public opinion. What it means is that they're going to end up not making any gains in next year's off-year elections unless they get their act together. You cannot have the Democratic National Committee on the one hand and the elected officials that the DNC is charged with trying to keep in office and expand their base. You can't have them operating at cross purposes.
You would never see this in the Republican Party, and this also leaves the Democratic Party vulnerable to Republican criticism when there's a rift in our own organization in the Democratic Party. The thing is that I really think there's plenty of room for different opinions, different views, different reactions. I mean, he's sort of an irascible guy. He's a little irreverent sometimes. He speaks his mind. He's kind of explosive, obviously. And he's doing a good job over at the DNC. I just think the Democrats should say, look, that's Howard, you know. I mean, he's one of us. What can you know, Howard speaks his mind.
You want me to speak my mind?
Yeah.
They're cowards.
Yeah,
this is cowardice.
Coward
in the face of energy fire, enemy fire. These people, the Newsmaxes of the world, and all of these conservative pundits and commentators, they love this. This is red meat to them, and they know. And see, the part that they love about it the best is they don't have to say anything.
Yeah.
All of these Democrats, they know, will stampede away from Dean just because they're scared of what these people will say.
Yeah.
And it's cowardice. It's the kind of see, you can't win elections, and that's the bottom line here. Winning elections. You cannot win elections by being a punk. Bill Clinton didn't do it. There's been no president in recent history that's won an elected office by being a punk. And the bottom line here is if they're not prepared to stand up as Democrats and say, yeah, you know what? This represents the Republicans represent a white Christian evangelical way of doing things. What's wrong with saying that? You don't have to want to run away from that. That's foolish.
Yeah, you don't want to run away from it because they are shameless about it. I mean, they're not afraid. Like, you know, when one of their own steps out on the line and says, look, I want a theocracy. Bill Frisch trying to pander to the Christian right and bully bully the Democrats into making decisions about judicial nominations in the filibuster struggle. That was all about, you know, pandering to theocrats.
Yeah.
And basically what they do is when one of theirs speaks out like that, the Republicans don't go, hey, screw Frist, or, you know, that guy's a loudmouth. He just disappears for a little while.
Yeah, well, I mean, look, if they do say it, they say it behind closed doors. They don't go public. These people went out of their way to publicly distance themselves from Howard Dean, and I fault them for that.
I do, too. Let's not use up all our energy here, Riley. We got to pace ourselves.
I'm sorry. And I didn't even play softball last night.
Oh, what happened with that?
Well,
the softball game there, Kalo.
Oh, WNYC narrowly defeated Aramax Radio.
That's okay.
It was close. Nine runs.
We're starting to beat them in the ratings in some ways, aren't we?
Yeah.
We've stolen some of their listeners, so I guess it all evens out in the long run. I don't know if we're beating them in the ratings, but I do know we have some of their listeners.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we're going to keep them. That's okay with you. So let's get into this real quick. Big Tobacco, the tobacco lawsuit, from $130 billion, they decide all of a sudden the government decides, well, we'll take $10 billion. It could have anything to do with the $10 million a year the tobacco industry gives to Republican politicians?
Oh, no, never that.
Yeah.
You know, that was a very big scandal among black Democrats for a minute. I don't know how it is now, but a few years ago there was a very big scandal because Big Tobacco was funding black Democrats to the tune of some very substantial numbers as well. They spread their money out among people they think are going to be somewhat favorable to the idea. And, you know, it's funny for me, Mark, because I'm a former smoker like you are.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a former cigar smoker. And, you know, I took essentially a pro-tobacco position for a long time about these things. But the longer it is since I smoked, the less sympathetic I feel toward big tobacco.
I always knew it was bad for you. That, you know, and I always knew that they were lying, and I always knew there's no way as a smoker that you can't know that it's horrendous for you.
Well, you also know that it's addicting.
Right, but you justify it. You're like, hey, come on, I have a right. You know what I mean? The cigarettes, it should be my choice.
Yeah, I'm not addicted. It's, I just roll out of bed and light up in the morning first thing because I like it.
Exactly. So coming up next, we're going to talk about Janice Rogers Brown. Get into her confirmation and her extremism. We're going to talk a little bit more about the Bush administration wanting to take money out of the hands of the victims of 9/11, and also we'll talk a little bit more about this global warming thing, because they got a guy in the administration who's in charge of looking over these numbers about global warming. He used to work for the petroleum company, and he changes things around. He rewrites results of scientific evidence. 17 past the hour, Air America Radio.
Oh, Franken, nothing to lose. Makes you laugh at the troubling news. Sometimes I wonder if he's hitting the booze. Al Franken,
King of the Jews.
Air America Radio.
Yeah, 21 past the hour. Mark Maron is Mark Riley.
Good morning.
It's Air America Radio's Morning's Edition. That song's going to make me cry, dude. It's just going to make me cry.
Yeah, it reminds me of an ex-girlfriend of mine as well.
It reminds me of high school, man. It just reminds me where everything was ahead of me, and I wasn't full of dread and panic, and I was going to do great things in the world. Remember at high school, man?
You are doing great things.
I'm going to cry. Hey, Morning's Edition. I was sitting there watching a movie. I watched Kinsey last night on tape, which is, you know, a great movie, disturbing movie, very interesting film. And I've been thinking about films lately. I've been thinking, like, am I ever going to make a movie? You know, there's sometimes that eventually you got to let things go, you know what I mean? There are certain dreams I think are attainable, but certain dreams that aren't. And it's part of maturity to compromise some of those dreams, unfortunately. Isn't it, Riley?
No.
Come on, look back.
No, man.
What was one of those things that you said you were going to do?
I did one of them, believe it or not.
Which one?
When I was about 10, 11 years old, I became a James Brown fanatic.
Yeah.
My goal in life for about 3 years was to meet and talk to James Brown, which I later did.
Well, that's reasonable. That's not like you didn't go out to be one of the Famous Flames or to play behind James Brown or to maybe have James Brown go, all right, Riley, you take it. You know what I mean? I mean, those are the kind of dreams I have. You know, where you know, I can fly, or where people, where I lead thousands and thousands of people in some sort of great social movement.
I've done that. I've thought about, you know, wanting to, you know, lead a march somewhere.
There you go. See
or, you know, really do something concrete about world peace or something. But then I wake up.
Yeah. Oh, come on. We're doing it here on some level. But the reason I was thinking about movies, Kalo, is just the terms, like, because I wanted to write a film, and I think film has a lasting effect, you know what I mean? Like, if it's a great film, eventually people will be like, well, that's a great film. That's a Marc Maron film.
Well, so does writing a book. And I always wanted to write a book, and that probably will not be happening. But you wrote a book. So
I wrote a book, and that book's available for $2 at Amazon. I think they have 8,800 used available. Now, I'm not giving myself a credit. That book has a very strong following of about 10 people who love it.
I read it. It's great.
Thank you very much.
There you go. There's 9 left.
Should I plug it? Jerusalem Syndrome. My life is a rock on the side. Let's get back into the news, because, you know, enough about me, but I will be at the Strand Bookstore tomorrow morning from 6 to 9 with the show and Eric Bogosian and Jim David and Ward Sutton, the cartoonist.
But not with me!
I'm sorry, buddy. You're going to Disney World. You should be happy. You're going to have a great time.
I should be.
Have you've been there, right, once before?
No.
It's the happiest place on earth.
Yeah, I'm sure.
It's a small world. You go, you'd be surprised.
Is the happiest place on earth.
Okay.
It's true. They have a happiness index. It's the only place in the world.
Oh, okay. Well, let's talk. Where is Bhutan?
Somewhere in the Himalayas.
Okay. All right. So, well, maybe the next vacation, take Vivica to Bhutan.
There you go.
You have to sell her on the ride.
Yeah,
ride?
I know. yeah, the plane into the airport.
That's it. From there on out. So this is very disturbing news in terms of the Bush administration wanting to take not only $44 million back from the victims of 9/11 because the GAO, the Government Accountability Office, has decided it was distributed in a way that wasn't along the lines that Congress had initiated, but in its defense, New York said we distributed it through agencies that could do it most effectively at the time. Now, the big concern to me is this $125 million of unspent workers' compensation that the Bush administration also wants to take back from the city. And the reason this is heinous is because the city is thinking ahead. Look, you know, we were here during 9/11. The smell in the air was toxic, and there's no way to not know it was toxic. And at the time, they said, the EPA said, it's no problem. But they have no idea. They had no idea, and you had guys down there working 24 hours a day, round the clock, inhaling that toxic fumes. Who the hell knows what health repercussions that's going to have a few years from now? Just keep the $125 million just in case we need to help these guys.
Well, you know, what's interesting about this, Mark, is that it's usually cloaked in the notion of it being cops and firefighters, the first responders.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly they were a good chunk of the people that were down there for a long period of time. But you know who else was down there for a long period of time? People forget this. Iron workers, for example.
My neighbor. The guy, just a construction guy, he volunteered. You had hundreds of volunteers down there digging through that rubble.
Not only that, initially, and I heard this from people who were there and saw this, the steel beams and stuff were so hot because of the fire that had taken place.
Yeah.
When those iron workers first went down into Ground Zero and started trying to dig, they were burning their feet. They burned holes in their shoes because the stuff that they tried to stand on to dig in was so hot.
Yeah,
burn through their feet.
Oh, yeah. And that smell and the air quality, I mean, I think that this $125 million for workers' compensation is essential. And the reason it's unspent, in my analysis, is that it might need to be spent in the future. There could be a lot of health issues for a lot of people in that area. We don't know the future repercussions of this. But this is not something that this administration cares about, because this is an administration that doesn't see greenhouse gases as a problem. This is an administration that refutes scientific research around global warming because big business is more important.
And let me tell you something. If I were Mayor Mike Bloomberg, I would take the $125 million and the $44 million in cash, walk out to the middle of the Brooklyn Bridge, and tell Washington, come get it.
Yeah. We're going to talk about the greenhouse gas problem. I found some of that tape of Howard Dean talking. So that's all coming up next here on Air America Radio.
Yo.
Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
I'll see you at the Strand tomorrow. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
You won't see me.
I know. This is Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. Riley will be flying to Disney World. I will be at the Strand doing the show with Eric Bogosian, mayoral candidate Steve Virginia Shields, Jim David, the comedian, will be there, Ward Sutton, the cartoonist. We're going to talk to the owners of the Strand about the nature of the independent bookstore. The Strand is an amazing New York landmark. There's literally thousands and thousands of books. It's almost impossible to find one. That's sort of like the Disneyland of bookstores.
It is the Disneyland of bookstores, and unlike many of the other chain bookstores, when you go into the Strand, it smells like books.
Like old books.
Old books.
Yeah, and it takes hours. You can spend this day at the Strand. We'll be giving away tickets to see me in New Jersey on June 25th in Hasbrook Heights at Bananas Comedy Club. You can go to bananascomedyclub.com to check that out. We'll also have coffee and some snacks for you. Have some T-shirts, some giveaways.
Swag.
Who knows what will happen. Now let's get into this. How are your teeth, Chris? How are your teeth? Did you find anything about the dental plan, Chris? You all right?
Yes, I called the dentist and everything, and apparently there's a check that's going to be coming in for about $300.
Yeah.
All right.
Strike
so
City
Hall. A little bit of success. I don't get that qualifies for me to win my $10 because you didn't get. You're still getting a raw deal. It sounds like, because Brendan.
No. No, I mean, first of all, Brendan hasn't even had the operation done yet, you know, and second of all, I had to pay up front. That's why I had to pay so much money.
I'll fill people in. Kalo, the Costco ho, our board op, is having had some wisdom teeth extracted for the cost of $1,600. Brendan McDonald on the same health plan comes in and says he's getting his done for $10. So, of course, we had to deal with 2 days of $10. $10.
$10 a tooth. That's a string and doorknob included.
For 2 days, Kayla was like, could not believe the cost difference. And, you know.
Oh, like you wouldn't have a problem with that.
I didn't say I wouldn't have a problem with it. Would I let it ruin my day?
Yes, you would.
I'm pretty sure you would.
You're right. The National Academy of Sciences and 10 similar organizations from some of the world's most powerful nations released a statement Tuesday calling for a stronger international response to global warming because it's happening because of us, arguing there is now more than enough evidence of changing climate to justify taking immediate action. It also called on countries to begin setting stricter targets to reduce heat-trapping greenhouse gases to prevent the worst consequences of global warming from taking place. Now, of course, George Bush's response to this is like, it's just science. It doesn't mean nothing. That, you know, it's not us. It's just natural. God is doing this to us. And you know what's sad, Riley, is there is a contingent within the religious right, within evangelical Christianity, that believes in revelations and that believes that we are the keepers of the planet, and that means that we are meant to deplete it of everything because the end is coming anyways. There's some other Christian groups that believe, well, we are supposed to take responsibility. Well, I prefer that particular point of view. But now Tony Blair calling on George Bush to help out with a global effort to stop this, to stop industrialized nations from polluting so much. But of course, George Bush being the pandering doofus he is, corporations over people means that he's not willing to do that.
You know, someone suggested, I can't remember who it was, that Tony Blair should have used the Iraqi war situation as leverage with Bush, mm-hmm. and said to George W. Bush, look, either you go back to the table, sign on to the Kyoto Accords on global warming, or we'll pull our troops out of Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, Tony Blair doesn't have that kind of stone.
Well, it's interesting. You know, we had the Downing Street memo, and literally within a week and a half now, we've got Tony Blair saying, what's really important is the world. Well, you know, we talked to a few days ago, Betsy Rosenberg, host of Air America Radio's Eco Talk, on Monday, actually. She attended the UN World Environmental Conference in San Francisco, and Al Gore spoke on global warming. Can we listen to that, Kayla? Let's listen to a little Betsy Rosenberg, who will be on our show again on Monday to keep us up to date on this stuff.
Gore says we're actually seriously in trouble. He calls the threat of global warming an emergency. He says this is a threat, in fact, much greater than terrorism. It was a very graphic, detailed, but at the same time very compelling presentation about what's already happened, documenting glaciers that have already disappeared and what we're in for if we don't make an eco-U-turn pretty soon here.
Hey, I feel the effects. That was Betsy Rosenberg, host of Air America Radio's Eco Talk. She'll be on again Monday to keep us up to date on environmental issues. But I feel the difference, Riley. Sometimes you go out, you know, it used to be you go out in the sun for a half hour, you didn't have blisters. Is that a problem?
But you know what? What people, I think, don't understand about this is exactly what the Kyoto Protocols, which Bush walked away from the minute he became president,
mm-hmm.
and that means that the United States did not sign on to them. The only other developed nation that didn't was Australia. But what were they, you know, a lot of people may say, well, what was supposed to be done here?
Well, here, let me do it. I'll do it. So, Riley, what was supposed to be done here?
You know what it was?
Yeah.
Cutting greenhouse gas emissions to 5% below 1990 levels. That was 15 years ago.
Mm.
And they were supposed to do it by 2012, which is the year that they're supposed to have the Olympics somewhere or another. Now, that doesn't seem to be an outrageous thing. We're talking about a virtually a 20-year period to reduce greenhouse gas emissions by a mere 5%.
I just don't know what the hell these people are thinking. I really don't understand the way that they entitle that this administration, Republicans in general, and some Democrats, entitle corporations to go on polluting, to change the standards so they can go on polluting in the name of money, of course.
It's the money, and it's what they want.
To the point where, you know, you have this White House official, this guy Philip A. Cooney, who was a lobbyist at the American Petroleum Institute, is now sort of, you know, overseeing, you know, climate change
language
protocol.
Yeah, he's editing the
scientific releases.
Yeah.
That comes from scientists. He's editing the reports from scientists and changing the language of these releases. It's unbelievable, some of them, like this. For example, a sentence in an October 2002 draft of Our Changing Planet. Originally read, quote, many scientific observations indicate the Earth is undergoing a period of relatively rapid change. That was a scientific survey. So he changes it to, quote, many scientific observations point to the conclusion that the Earth may be undergoing a period of relatively rapid change.
Mm-hmm.
So he adds the word may.
May.
Mm. That's all it takes. I mean, language is everything. It's all you got is words.
Add a little bit of doubt to the mix, see? And that is the entire point. And, folks, the important part about this guy Cooney is he was changing scientific reports. He's not a scientist.
Not a scientist. He was a petroleum lobbyist.
Yeah.
This is a guy that Bush placed in the administration to do exactly this, to spin it in the direction of the Bush administration's ideology on this.
Yeah, and we're talking about making sure that corporate America pays no price for the emissions that are causing this global warming. That's the thing. Bush's whole argument here, Mark, was about jobs.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you start making American companies do this, then they're going to have to lay people off. Now, that is the most specious logic that you can come up with for an environmental problem that almost every other country in the world acknowledges is happening and will, by the way, take place before Social Security runs out.
And Scott McClellan said, yesterday that the White House, speaking for the White House, of course, said that, you know, these reports were scientifically sound and that it was, you know, it was his job to make revisions, to doctor. But, you know, a job to make revisions, you would assume that a job like this means that you summarize, that you put things into context, not that you change the language so it lessens the threat on paper in order to accommodate the administration's vision for, you know, continued pollution in the name of big business interests.
That's why they gave Philip Cooney the highlighter.
Yeah.
You know, so
yeah.
We could go through this stuff and just small changes. Changing is to maybe. Are ways that you can begin to sow the seeds of doubt. And, of course, once that filters up to the top, it gives George W. Bush and his minions, including Cheney, by the way, who's the main formulator of the Bush administration's energy policy, it gives them room to say, well, hey, this isn't scientific fact. This is just speculation.
But
we don't have to do this.
Right. Where the hell do they think they're going to go when they can't breathe anymore? What happens on the day that everybody wakes up and everything feels kind of funny and we can't breathe properly? What happens to that day? What happens to the day when the water's undrinkable? How come these people can't see, the extended forecast? Don't they care about their children? Don't they care about their grandchildren? Don't they realize that this is a slippery slope to decay in a very quick way, destruction?
Well, they figure that their legacy, their financial legacy, will keep their children and grandchildren alive because they'll be able to afford to get the breathing apparatus that most Americans won't be able to use without growing gills.
Right. In the meantime, you know, you'd think that the Democrats would be addressing this, that the reaction would be specifically to environmental policy, that the Democrats would be using their time right now to say, look, here's our plan. This is why it's bad. But no, instead, they're all jumping on Howard Dean. The centricrats have decided that Howard Dean, he doesn't speak for them, these frightened little babies. I mean, you know, John Edwards, you know, Governor Bill Richardson, Nancy Pelosi, who was a little more diplomatic than the rest of them, after Dean made this comment, can we hear that, Chris?
The Republicans are not very friendly to different kinds of people. I mean, they're pretty monolithic party. Pretty much, you know, they all behave the same. They all look the same. And they all, you know, it's pretty much white Christian party.
White Christian Party. Now, you know, Howard Dean is Howard Dean, and the truth of the matter is he's not saying anything that we haven't said here today. He's being honest. He's speaking his mind. But, you know, whatever you think of Howard Dean as a Democrat or as a Democratic politician, I mean, it seems to me that the reaction should be, oh, yeah, you know, Howard, you know, that's Howard. Not
yeah.
Like I distance myself from him because I only care about my campaign. I distance myself from him because I'm trying to work the middle. I distance myself from him because
I want to be president one day.
Right, or I want him out. Do you think that the Democrats, you know, Bill Richardson, Joe Biden, Nancy Pelosi, do you think that there is an active movement to push him out, perhaps Hillary Clinton, maybe Bill Clinton as well might be involved in this ideology?
I don't know, but to paraphrase Mike Tyson at a press conference yesterday, they sound like they want to gut him like a fish. I mean, it's ridiculous. And the one person that's had the guts to publicly stand up with Howard Dean is Congresswoman Sheila Jackson Lee from Texas, and we ought to salute her because she said, look, The party ought to be unified. They ought to be unified behind what this man's saying. Period.
Well, at the very least, no, yeah, that's Howard. You know, you know Howard. I mean, when the Republicans, when Bill Frist gets on there and says that, you know, we're going to do the nuclear option, we're going to, you know, change the rules of the Senate to accommodate the religious right, do Republicans come out and say, you know, Frist, I'm staying away from Frist? When DeLay is, you know, up to his neck in legal problems and should be thrown out, like, you know, just like bad garbage, do the Republicans say, hey, let's cut DeLay loose? Well, actually, they did a little. But the truth of the matter is,
but they were unnamed then.
But he was a criminal. You know, I mean, the guy was a criminal. All Howard Dean is doing is speaking his mind, and he's saying some basic truths about, you know, what he sees is the problem. And Democrats are saying, well, we got to distance ourselves. It's shameful. They should just say, ah, yeah, it's Howard. You know Howard. That's all. And you know what? We found some more sound from Howard that we're going to hear next. It's Air America Radio, 46 past the hour.
Morning Sedition.
Just to wake up.
Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
I've heard about those people.
On Air America Radio.
Thanks.
Past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley on Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Yo.
See you tomorrow morning at the Strand Bookstore at the corner of 12th Street and Broadway. See you in Disney World tomorrow, Mark Riley. I'll be hanging out with Eric Bogosian, if you don't mind.
That's okay.
By the way, we've been talking about Howard Dean's comments. We've been talking about the Democratic response to Howard Dean's comments. We've been talking about Kalo's teeth, how he got a raw deal on his wisdom teeth removal. And out of all the things we talk about, we get a call about Kalo's teeth. Craig, how are you in South Carolina? What do you have to say?
What's up, Craig?
I'm doing pretty good. How you guys doing, Mark and Mark?
Good, man.
Yeah. Actually, I just had a bit of words of wisdom, pun intended, for Kalo. Because I just had my wisdom teeth out less than a week ago, and maybe you could take a little bit of sadistic glee or whatever and hope that when PW gets it done, you could be like me and get like a dry socket and bleed for 4 days.
Wow. Man.
Do you put peroxide in that bad boy?
No, just like diluted mouthwash and
Oh, okay.
And Vicodin, Percocet, OxyContin.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know what that anesthetic they gave you was, but I have no memory of like even hours after the procedure.
Oh, get out! Wow, man. Kayla's like, that sounds great. Can I get that every day? Thanks for the call, Craig.
Thanks, Craig.
So he paid less, but he got the infection, and you know, maybe if it comes right down to that Schadenfreude, you're only out on this one. So look. Howard Dean, you know, made some comments. Bill Richardson, Joe Biden, Nancy Pelosi, a lot of John Edwards all
John
said, like, you know, hey, you know, he's not speaking for all of us. Well, you know, they didn't even hear. I mean, they sort of wussed out a little bit, you know.
Yes, they did.
These are the centricrats that should really just say, yeah, I know Howard. You know, Howard's Howard, but no, they're like, oh, God, you know, he's not speaking for all of us. Well, we found a piece of sound that they haven't heard yet, and, man, I wonder what they'd have to say about this. Huh? Can we hear that, Kalo?
What the f*** happened to the Delta I used to know? Where's the spirit? Where's the gun? Huh? This could be the greatest night of our lives. You're gonna let it be the worst.
Oh, we're afraid to go with you, Pluto. We might get in trouble.
Well, just kick my ass from now on! Not me! I'm not gonna take this!
Senator Joe Biden.
He's a dead man!
Senator John Edwards.
Dead!
Governor Bill Richardson.
Dead!
Wow, Howard Dean really worked up there. I guess we'll have to wait for Democratic feedback on that one.
Yeah.
Hey, buddy, we actually have another call. It's from Future Mark.
Me? Cool, put him through.
Hey, buddy, what's up?
Hey, buddy, what's up?
I'm on vacation, man.
Cool. Where are you?
In my apartment.
So you didn't go anywhere?
Well, in 2050, it's more like any when. You know how I'm here and you're there?
Uh-huh.
I'm also on vacation 50 years from now.
Whoa. How does that work?
Pretty simple. I just strapped myself into this vinyl trip harness.
A trip harness, huh? Wow, they're I think, you know, I'd like to have one of those. There are times where I could definitely use a trip harness, I think.
Well, yeah, it feels kind of, you know, trippy. So you can just punch a date in, and then you're time traveling.
Okay, wait. All right. So there's like a future Mark, and he's, well, we're on vacation right now?
Yeah. You want to talk to him? I can get him on speakerphone.
Hey, buddy, what's up?
Hey, buddy, what's
hey,
up?
Hey, buddy, what's up? Dude, you sound kind of funny.
Yeah, well, that's because in 2105, everything's been miniaturized.
Oh.
People, buildings, everything except food and oil, you know, natural resources.
Mm.
They figured the way to make it last was to make everyone, you know, really tiny. Now, it worked. A gallon of gas will last me about a year.
Hey, future Mark. Tell Mark how tall you are. Go on, tell him.
I'm 1 inch 9.
Oh.
I got it where it counts. You know what I mean. Little joke there.
So what, wait, what happened to make this whole miniaturizing thing necessary?
The ecological holocaust, mostly. Ice caps melted, hurricanes, tsunamis. The U.S. kind of crumbled like a big cookie. Most everybody died.
Dude, that's not funny.
it was pretty funny. You had to see it, I guess.
So, wait, now if the U.S. crumbled like a big cookie, where are you?
I'm on the beach.
That's cool.
Tell Mark where the beach is, future Mark. This is going to kill him.
Montana. Technically the kingdom of Montana.
Dude.
Yeah, all this rest of America is Montana, Arkansas, parts of Louisiana.
Really?
Now you know why we have to be this small.
So what's it like being small?
That's pretty cool. It takes like a month to finish a beer. The only real problem are the cats.
Wait, you didn't shrink the cats?
The floods got all of them except for two, and now they hunt us. Speaking of the devil, I gotta go find a hole to hide in. All right, see you in a week, future Mark.
Wait, whoa, future Mark. Aren't you going to warn me about something?
Cool, future Mark. Future Mark does that for you, too?
Yeah.
Well, obviously, buy property in Montana. You only need to buy about a square foot. You'll be a king. Later. I really got to get out of here.
Okay, later. Hey, Mark, I got to go, too. This harness is starting to ride up a little bit.
Whoa, wait. Aren't you going to warn me about something?
Dude, the strap is going right up my crack. Whoa. Maybe next week.
Okay, later, man.
Ow! All right, later.
Always good to talk to me in the future. I can't wait.
All of you
in
the future.
Yeah, two me's in the future. What do you know about that, man? Holy mackerel. So, holy mackerel, did I just say that?
Holy
mackerel.
Mackerel.
Holy mackerel. Buy some Marino Brothers.
I knew you were going.
Holy mackerel. Go to Marino and something. It's so funny. I don't even have to do that. Those guys are just so damn nice to me.
Yeah, they got a line in front of the fish store. No, they're not even open yet.
That would be amazing if they did. Did I tell you that my, I had the weird moment with my new neighbor?
No.
I got a new neighbor who's, I'm jealous of her apartment. Carlos, our landlord, just redid the entire place after that woman passed away.
Really?
And yeah,
put marble countertops.
I just realized, I wonder if the neighbor knows it that. Because, here's what happens. I get a package. I get a package from for the woman, the new woman next door, and they deliver it to my apartment. She comes over, she gets it. I introduce myself. I just say, I'm Mark, and here's your package. How are you? Then I run into her again. She's like, wait a minute. I listen to you every day, I think, don't I? Am I right?
Oh,
and I'm like,
a fan.
Oh. Yeah, and I'm like, yeah, that's me. She's like, well, that's thank you. I really, I enjoy your show. But now it feels kind of weird because I know she's over there and she knows a lot about me and that every day that I'm talking to her, to Shoshana.
Now, what happens when you start, yelling through the walls and she starts hearing you?
Well, that's the weird thing, given the situation that happened with the guy downstairs a few days ago, which I talked about yesterday. Maybe I'll talk about it again today. Did I talk about that here? Did I? No, I didn't.
No.
Oh, that was awkward.
Well,
we're going to have to wait on that.
Don't let me hear about you sharing any of that Marino Brothers salmon with your neighbor.
Yeah,
right?
It's Marino and Sons, actually.
Well, Marino.
I'm done. No, there's a website. It's just a few guys at the fish store.
Fish.com.
Right, we got Gary Sinise coming up in a little while, so that's certainly worth sticking around for. And we got the Cliff Notes coming up next.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
It's 6 past the hour. Mark Maron here with Mark Riley. It's Morning's Edition on Air America Radio.
Yep, yep.
Good morning, Mark. I'm going to be at the Strand Bookstore tomorrow here in New York at Broadway and 12th Street doing the show live without you.
I'm sorry.
I'm sorry, too. You'll be going to Disney World, but I'll have Eric Bogosian with me.
Don't tell everybody that.
I'll have Jim David.
No, you can tell everybody about that. Don't tell everybody I'm going to Disney World.
I'm sorry. He's not going to
Disney World. I have a reputation
uphold. Actually, he's not going to Disney World with his family to have some fun. He's got a reputation uphold as someone who's
right. I'll be in the street.
Who doesn't. Riley keeps his ear to the street, man.
That's right.
Keeping it real.
Yo.
It's going to be a big day tomorrow. I'm excited. Today, Gary Sinise is going to be in the studio a little later. If you're just tuning in, here are a few highlights of what we talked about on the program. It's time for today's Morning's Edition Cliff Notes. Tony Blair told President Bush that global warming is the biggest issue facing the planet. Blair's views are diametrically opposed to President Bush's, who says the biggest challenge facing us is, quote, evil and stuff. Bush responded by saying Blair is with the terrorists. An Israeli researcher concluded that Jesus died of a blood clot. The blood clot theory from the Israeli physician replaces the explanation, unpopular in Israel, that Jesus died from, quote, Jews. Dozens of Catholic institutions are considering changing their names to Holy Blood Clots of Christ High School. KFC restaurant in Pakistan, Kentucky Fried Chicken restaurant in Pakistan, has been the target of anti-American violence. Partial blame lies with the advertising company who sloppily translated the slogan finger-licking good into Pashto as feces-smeared Koran. Feces-smeared Koran.
Ooh.
6 hours after the attack on the KFC, six bodies were hauled out. Four had been burned, two extra crispy. Hey, come see me. I'll be bananas this weekend. It's not this weekend. It's actually June 25th. Today's phrase is dropping into conversation. So what if conservatives are insinuating that Hillary Clinton is a lesbian? Wake up, sheeple. At least you won't be like George Bush, always shoving things under the carpet.
Ooh.
Is that bad? I mean, maybe it's a little bad.
Why are you hearing Straight to Hell by the Clash in my head?
Again? Right, how many times do I got to go to hell?
I don't know.
You know, I think you know who should go to hell and probably will is this entire administration. For one, just today or yesterday, saying that they want $44 million back from the victims of 9/11. The Bush administration, the General Accountability Office, has decided that that if need be, because of the way it was distributed to these families, these victims of 9/11, that the money's got to come back because they didn't hand it out properly. New York decided to let subcontractors, some other agencies, distribute the money so it could be done effectively and in a timely fashion. But now they're saying, well, that wasn't part of the rules, and we want the money back. How the hell are they going to go get $44 million back from victims' families?
And how are they going to rationalize it by saying they failed to follow instructions? By the way, between that $44 million and the $125 million that they're also trying to get back because it hasn't been spent yet, that's the entire allocation.
Yeah, the nerve. The reason the $125 million workers' compensation money is still here is because there's some foresight going on in terms of, you know, the damage, the health damage that might have occurred to emergency workers down there with the toxic fumes coming out of that burning pit that, you know, we smelled, as I smelled in Queens for months.
Months. Literally.
So let's get into this, too. The tobacco company that got off the hook yesterday on a $130 billion lawsuit that was being brought against them by the government, which had been going on for, what, almost 6 years?
Yep.
The lawsuit was basically accusing and proving that the tobacco company had hoodwinked people for 50 years on the health ramifications of smoking, and also the fact that they just went out of their way to addict kids with their advertising to make everyone feel like it was good, it was healthy. Have a cigarette. Clear those lungs up. So now the original set of $130 million, now $10 billion, the tobacco company, they were even surprised. They were like, really? Wait, can you repeat that? $10 billion? Couldn't be because the tobacco industry put $10 million into the campaign pockets of Republican politicians.
Well, you know what, though, Mark?
Mm.
It's good to live in America because now what we're seeing is just a little bit of blowback from Democrats who are upset about the fact that their Justice Department, America's Justice Department, tanked and bent over for big tobacco. Because that's what they did here.
Mm-hmm.
Now, let's parse this out properly.
Okay.
25 years, $130 billion to convince people not to smoke.
Right.
And instead of going for the gusto here, they turn around and say, well, we only want $10 billion.
Right.
And that's over 5 years.
Yeah.
Because after 5 years, of course, nobody in America will smoke anymore.
Yeah, of course. Right. No, you know what? If people who smoke, they'll defend it, and certainly they have a right to smoke if they want to smoke. It's clearly bad for you. A lot more people are smoking less, if not at all, in this country. But that doesn't stop Philip Morris, now known as Altria. Altria is a better name. Altria is almost heavenly. Heavenly cancer. Altria doesn't stop them from going into other countries, third world countries, and giving away cigarettes to children almost, getting people hooked internationally now that Americans are starting to wise up a little bit. Now let's talk about Janice Rogers Brown, who has now been nominated to the Federal Appeal Court in Washington, D.C. Am I right?
Yeah.
Now,
yeah.
This woman apparently...
she's been confirmed.
Right. But the quotes that I see of her in terms of, you know, how she thinks, talk about an activist.
Quote, well, she's... Go ahead.
Quote,
go ahead,
in the heyday of liberal democracy, all roads lead to slavery, end quote. What is that?
You know...
What is the thought?
I am always afraid of black people who will try and equate government with slavery. It's insane. It's absurd. It is a complete misreading of the history of black people in this country. You know, I don't know Janice Rogers Brown. I would give her a couple of style points for being married to a jazz musician. But when you start saying that government equals slavery, you are denying a huge chunk of American. Who does she think signed the Emancipation Proclamation? Jefferson Stinkin' Davis? Robert E. Lee?
What is she exactly saying, Riley? What is the argument that she makes in that, you know, how is she referring? Is this about social programs?
Yeah, it is. It's partially about social programs, but she believes that government is naturally and by nature intrusive in people's lives, and that intrusion comes most, most vividly in the form of some form of dependence on government.
Yeah, but that's such a bizarre and twisted way of looking at it, considering that this administration has gotten rid of, you know, bankruptcy laws, that people can no longer declare personal bankruptcy if they're in trouble. They can't sue corporations if they're hurt with any effectiveness anymore, because you've got to go through federal courts as opposed to state courts. And now, you know, most people, a lot of people are uninsured. Most companies, like Walmart, do not offer health care. There is a million ways that people are enslaved. Now, like that woman who stood up at that Bush speech and said, I'm working three jobs. Mm-hmm. And he said that only in America. Now, only in America is that type of slavery possible, and still not making ends meet. How is she going to say that helping people out or having effective social programs is any way comparable to slavery when you got people who are working three jobs because of Republican policy, that's not slavery?
Well, see, what this denies, Mark, is specifically black people's history in this country. Every time black people have made an advance in this country in terms of legislation, from the Emancipation Proclamation to civil rights laws, all of these different things have been done through government. Does Janice Rogers Brown seriously want people to believe that she would have this government job were it not for the fact that government at some point in American history interceded on behalf of her own people?
Yeah,
that's absurd.
She got infected with some sort of Randian cancer in her head. It doesn't sync up. You know, philosophically, she's a conservative activist, a Republican activist, as best I can see, and I think it's troublesome.
Well, she comes from a progressive family.
This is all about family problems, huh?
No.
Now we're all going to pay.
No. Well, see, that's the bizarre part. She apparently got conservative over time as she got closer to evangelical Christianity.
Oh, there you go. Well, I'm going to get closer to evangelical Christianity. In just a second, we've got the next next
nice,
coming
like
up next, Morning's Edition Radio Theater Temple of Doom.
Hi, this is Terry Jones from Monty Python. And if you're like me, you're tired of having geeks and dogs repeat things you said 30 years ago back to you as if you don't remember saying them, and then laughing as if they think they're so damn clever. I mean, wow, you memorized a 30-year-old movie? Oh, good show, old chap. Oh, great. Be president of the United States. Come on. And now for something completely different. It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Sedition Radio Theater Company players bring you their production of Marc Maron and the Temple of Doom.
In his last adventure, Private Eye Marc Maron and his stereotypical lesbian assistant Grace penetrated the Holier Than Them Festival in Atlanta, where they hoped some member of the Christo-Fascist Zombie Brigade could tell them where to find the Antichrist.
Come on, Grace, try to mix in. You're standing out in this crowd like,
Well, like a stereotypical lesbian in a crystal fascist zombie brigade.
What do you expect from me? I can't talk to these people. We don't even speak the same language. Hey, there's a softball game.
Knock yourself out, Tiger.
Hey, guys, I brought my own catcher's mitt.
Now for a little spy work on my own.
Excuse me, fellow crystal fascist zombie.
I beg your pardon?
I said, hello, brother. Would you happen to know where I might find a fellow called the Antichrist?
Hey, are we already talking about the Antichrist?
Sure are.
Hooey, and it's not even 3 o'clock. This is the best holier-than-them festival ever.
Yeah, I was just wondering where the Antichrist is right now.
That's a good one. Since the Antichrist denies the Father and the Son, he's probably got a job at some TV show, erasing God's name from the scripts.
Or the Antichrist could just be an intern. It's harder to break into show business than you think. You know why, don't you?
The Jews!
But 2 Thessalonians says the Antichrist will set himself up in the temple of God. Maybe he's in a church.
Like George W. Bush?
Who are you, stranger?
I'm a fellow Christo-fascist zombie.
No, I thought something wasn't right about you. You got a big Jew nose and calicky Jew hair, and you've been nibbling on a poppy seed bagel since you got here. Whenever I see a Jew at a social affair, they're always, well, what do you call it? What's the word? Gnashing on something or condition.
Noshing?
Get him, boys!
Oh. You gotta get out of here.
Mark, stop yourself in the pool. My turn at bat.
Give me that bat, you whore of Babylon.
Sure. The correct term is sex industry worker of Babylon, you dumb hick.
Stop batting and start running.
Quick, you two. I know a way out. Over here.
Thanks, stranger. Say, who are you, anyway?
I'm a Christian.
I thought that's who we were running away from.
Not all Christians are alike, you know. Those guys aren't even in the majority. I mean, are all Jews just like you?
High strung? Always eating?
Yeah, more or less. That's... No, forget it. There's no time for this. Duck into the van.
How did you know to have a van waiting for me?
A Christian friend of yours sent me.
Yo, dog, you look like you opened a nasty can of whoop-ass.
News Daddy.
Let's roll.
Where is News Daddy taking them? Are Christians fighting each other now? Won't the rapture be a complete zoo? Who could even figure out the seating? Find out next week when we hear the Christian softball captain say...
I hate to say this, but if we ever expect to win, we need more dykes on this team.
That's next week on Mark Maron and the Temple of Doom. And tune in later as Mark Maron brings his special brand of whimsy to his own children's show in Uncle Mark's Treehouse.
Uncle Mark, it's time to put on your birthday glasses.
That's right, Bobby. My big glasses tell me who's having a birthday. I see Tommy. He's 45 years old today and alone. Happy birthday, Tommy. Oh, look, and there's Heather. She's 15 today and is getting disillusioned with her boyfriend, who's 30 and lives in his car. Happy birthday, both of you. Oh, and look, there's Jake. Wait, Jake's a guy I started out with in comedy. Jake is 39, and it looks like he got a movie deal.
Uncle Mark, how come you never got a movie deal?
That's it. Show's over. Jesus, kids. Everybody get out. Just get out. Get out, Uncle Mark's treehouse. Quit crying. Shut up. Shut up.
That's coming up later on Morning Sedition Radio Theater.
Nice. Ooh. Nice.
You got to catch that show. It's Bitter Uncle Mark.
Oh, man. Hey, I'm looking forward to talking to this guy from Salon Magazine, salon.com, Mark Bedgerman, who's going to tell us the story of Lieutenant Julian Goodrun, a veteran of both Iraq wars, who was blackballed by the military and unable to get the type of medical attention he needed for his post-traumatic stress syndrome. And the story is insane.
It's hideous.
What he went through and how he was ostracized because he was a whistleblower and he also had these health problems. So in order to pay back for his whistleblowing, the officers really, you know, put him through the ringer and ruined his life. And this is like that in and of itself, you know, addresses some issues about how underlings in the military are treated by officers if the officer does not agree or approve or want to distance themselves from them. But, you know, in terms of the health care issues, you know, we talked to Christopher Hedges here.
Yeah.
Who is the author of War is a Force That Gives Us Meaning and Losing Moses on the Highway, The Ten Commandments in America, one of our favorite guests. And he had something, he addressed the horrendous condition of how some of these guys are treated when they come back and the difficulties they go through. Can we hear that, Chris?
I think that what the state asks us to do, asks its young people to do, asks what it's asking them to do currently in Iraq, is something that will leave emotional and psychological scars of tremendous weight for them to carry for the rest of their lives. And sadly, when these people come back and try and tell us the truth, really about ourselves, come back, I think, in many ways as prophets,
mm-hmm.
to tell us about us as a people and us as a nation, we don't want to hear. We prefer the myth. You know, we prefer the big band playing and the martial music and glory and all the stuff that the, you know, 30 seconds of combat exposes as a lie.
Mm-hmm.
And we oftentimes ignore the very people who we've sent to sacrifice and who have something to tell us profoundly about ourselves, and I think we need to start listening to those voices, especially now.
That was Chris Hedges just a couple of days ago on Tuesday. He is the author of Losing Moses on the Freeway, The Ten Commandments in America, also War is a Force That Gives Us Meaning, addressing the issue of soldiers coming back and the troubles that they go through. And we're going to have Mark Benjamin on in just a few minutes to talk to us about the plight of Lieutenant Julian Goodrum and his fight with his officers, and also his fight with post-traumatic stress syndrome and just the challenges he's met by being blackballed by the Army.
What they did to this guy, you would not believe.
That's coming up next here on Air America Radio.
Sporting Tradition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
Morning Tradition on Air America Radio. Dan Pashman, son of Louis and Linda Pashman of New Jersey, has just informed us that it's Louis Pashman's birthday. Happy birthday, Louis Pashman.
Yeah.
Try and get out of the house a little bit. Do something. Maybe take a couple hours on your own if she'll let you. You know what I'm saying? Anyways, Morning Tradition, me, I will... I'm sorry, Linda. I just can't help myself.
That was so funny.
Where's Howie hiding? That's the big question. Howie Pashman, Dan's brother. Enough about the Pashmans. I will be appearing at the Strand Bookstore tomorrow with this show from 6 to 9. Joining me will be Eric Bogosian, mayoral candidate, C. Virginia Fields. We're going to have Jim David, the comedian. We're going to have Ward Sutton, the cartoonist. We're not going to have Mark Riley. He's going to be on his way, to the hard streets Disney World.
There you go.
You know, we've been talking a lot about that this morning. We've been talking a lot about Howard Dean and the pile-on by the centricrats, John Edwards, Bill Richardson, Nancy Pelosi, Joe Biden distancing themselves from Dean because they're afraid for their own careers.
Yeah, who's next?
Exactly. Whereas what they should be saying if Dean makes a statement that they don't like, they should just go, oh, there goes Howard. That's Howard. We're talking a lot about the federal government wanting to take back. The Bush administration wants to take money out of the hands of the victims of 9/11 because they say it wasn't distributed properly. And on top of that, they want to take $125 million away from the city of New York, put aside for workers' compensation because they say it hasn't been spent yet. The nads of these people. Right now on the phone, we're going to be talking about how soldiers are treated when they come home and what they are put through. In a very specific story, you know, this is a story of Julian Goodrum, Lieutenant. Lieutenant Julian Goodrum, and the story was going to be shared with us by Mark Benjamin, who's reported extensively on soldier stories with UPI. He's now the national correspondent for Salon.com, and this is an incredible story. Good morning, Mark Benjamin.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for being with us. You know, I read your piece on Lieutenant Goodrum, and it's just unbelievable. Can you put it in a nutshell for our listeners?
Basically, what happened is a soldier who's been a good soldier for 16 years and has had a clean record
and he made some very serious complaints about the Army. Some had to do with very dangerous vehicles. We've heard a lot about sort of unarmored vehicles mm-hmm. in Iraq. He served in Iraq. And the other is he got some very poor medical care when he got back. Both of those types of concerns have been confirmed by Congress. And it certainly looks, after a careful review of his record, that the Army then, as soon as he became a whistleblower, the Army came down on him, it looked at least, very, very hard.
Now, initially, the whistleblowing you're talking about was in relation to the medical care or the Humvees?
Both. When he was in Iraq, clearly there doesn't seem to be much disagreement about some of the vehicles that he was driving.
Right.
You know, they were unarmored. They were sticking sandbags on the roof, that kind of stuff. But they were also breaking down a lot, and they were driving what's called, they appear to have been driving what's called deadlined vehicles. I mean, they shouldn't be out there. And a soldier was killed, a young 23-year-old soldier was killed in an accident. He was chopped in half.
Mm.
And
awful.
Goodrum made some complaints about that because he believes, and there's some other soldiers who believe, that was a preventable death. But it's a pretty serious charge to make about the Army. When he was medically evacuated out of Iraq and sent to Fort Knox, Kentucky, he was put in what's called medical hold. And there was, in the fall of 2003, there's a whole series of news stories. I did some about how that medical hold situation. In other words, soldiers are waiting weeks and months for medical care. He made complaints about both those issues.
Suffering from?
Yes, and at the same time, he's suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder. That's mental stress from the war. He's been diagnosed four times with severe post-traumatic stress disorder, three times by the military, once by a civilian doctor. And as soon as he started complaining to Congress in the fall of 2003, and Congress started poking around about his concerns, that's when the record gets really shaky. And when I say shaky, I mean some of the documents in his record make it look like the Army may have come up with a concerted plan to come after him.
Now, Mark Benjamin, one of the things that certainly if you look at these kinds of situations over the long term, one of the things that seems to happen is that they isolate somebody like Julian Goodrum and kind of make it sound like he's nuts to be making these allegations, that there's something wrong with him, not wrong with the leadership that got him into that position, not with the, you know, with the vehicles, as you say, that maybe shouldn't have been on the road, that he was the problem. How did he react to that, if that happened to him?
He was blown away. I mean, he, to this day, you know, he's never had a problem, and his record clearly shows he hasn't had a problem for 16 years, and he's shocked at some of the things that happened to him. And to give you an idea of some of the things that happened to him, you're right. They do appear, and when I say they, I mean superior officers who were implicated by Goodrum's complaints, appear, for example, to have some of the documents accusing him of bad deeds appear to have been manufactured after the fact. They accused him of being a convicted drug dealer, for example. They claimed to have done an FBI background check on him, which clearly is not the case. I mean, it's pretty outlandish stuff if the review of the records is the way it seems. So he was shocked. He was absolutely blown away.
So they accused him of being a drug dealer, which he wasn't. The identification that they had on record was somebody differently entirely. And then they tried to accuse him of having a inappropriate relationship with a female officer, right?
That's correct. And even when the Army started to investigate that, and the Army investigating officer determined that the evidence alleging that he was having an affair was, in that investigating officer's words, tainted. In other words, one of these officers who was allegedly trying to get Goodrum was threatening soldiers to make statements against him. And in fact, when the Army investigated, they determined that evidence was tainted.
So in your view, see, it also seems to me that they were giving him the runaround on how to get the health attention that he needed, because they couldn't give it to him, you know, at Fort Knox. And then when he went to get the health attention that he needed, he was classified as a deserter. So in your eyes, was this all retribution for being a whistleblower?
It's certainly, when I look carefully, I've gone through hundreds of pages of documents and listened to hours and hours of tapes from his sort of disciplinary proceedings in the Army. It is a very convincing case that there was a concerted effort to crack down on a whistleblower.
We're talking to Mark Benjamin from Salon.com. We're talking about the case of Lieutenant Julian Goodrum, a veteran of both Iraq wars who was blackballed by the military after some comments he made. I guess another question I'd like to ask, I mean, this is a type of thing, there seems to be a good example in your story about how officers insulate themselves and blame the underlings.
Yeah, there is a... there are a lot of legal scholars who believe that essentially the military justice system is just not working very well. And to give people an idea how it works, in the military, officers have incredible control over what happens with judicial proceedings. In other words, an officer decides what they're going to be investigating and what they're not going to be investigating. An officer decides who the investigating officers are going to be. An officer decides whether a soldier will face a trial by jury called a court-martial or some other lesser discipline.
It's a lot of power.
That's right. And the argument is that if you're an officer who has done something wrong, which arguably that may have happened in Goodrum's case, you can use that system to cover your ass, essentially.
And what would it have been that the officer did wrong? I'm not sure we uncovered that.
What in this case, what appears to have happened is an officer in Iraq may have ordered soldiers to drive very dangerous vehicles that shouldn't have been on the road. That's
okay.
A basic accusation, and they've ended up killing a soldier.
Right.
In the United States, there was a medical system that was essentially hurting soldiers. I mean, soldiers were waiting weeks and months, and they were, Congress confirmed this, to get medical appointments. And when that was exposed, some of the soldiers who were in charge of this medical system, for example, at Fort Knox, got hauled in front of Congress.
Mm.
So this was a big deal. I mean, these officers, if Goodrum's complaints are true, these officers had a lot to lose.
Mark Benjamin, how does someone, because I think this may be a question that's on the minds of some of our listeners here, how does someone looking for medical care end up being charged as AWOL?
It's a little bit complicated, but basically what happened was he asked for medical care for his post-traumatic stress disorder, his mental anguish from the war. He was turned away. He was told, we are not going to treat you, and in fact, the records clearly show this.
This is by the military?
Correct.
Okay.
He checked himself into a civilian psychiatric hospital, and when he checked himself in, he didn't show up at the military base, and they charged him as a deserter, period.
And the case to be made is that it seems to me that because he was implicating officers in the death of this soldier and the keeping those Humvees off the road, and then through this, his superior officer was literally taking advantage of his mental condition in hopes that he would either be proven to be a deserter or maybe even hurt himself.
Well, that's right. And in order for this to all be true, of course, it has to be clear that these officers were coordinating with each other in an effort to crack down on him. And
right.
In fact, the documents in the file do show that these officers are in contact with each other and are talking about how to handle his case.
Wow. We're talking to Mark Benjamin from Salon.com about the case of Lieutenant Julian Goodrum. What is up with Lieutenant Julian Goodrum right now?
Well, what happened is they, after 18 months and over $40,000 in legal bills that the soldier is trying to pay, they finally found him, the Army, found him innocent of being a deserter. They found him innocent, interestingly enough, they found him innocent of actually having sex with one of his female sergeants, but they have found him guilty of a lesser charge, which is essentially looking, they call it fraternization when you're having sex with another soldier or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
They've come up with a new charge, which is essentially, well, if you weren't having sex with this officer, it at least looks bad. That's essentially what the charge is. And they have found him guilty of that. They found him, fined him $4,000. They've put a permanent letter in his record saying he's a bad guy, but he's appealing. I mean, he wants to be completely exonerated.
Mark Benjamin, when you look at the totality of what happened to Lieutenant Goodrum, how far up the food chain do you think the responsibility for making the decisions with regard to this man in terms of denying the medical care and all, how far up the food chain does all this go?
It's really difficult to say. Certainly the officers who had the most to lose, which was a colonel at Fort Knox and a captain in Iraq, seem to have been really involved. However, in his disciplinary proceedings, the people that are making the decisions about whether or not he's guilty or innocent are two-star generals. The case is now in front of one of the highest military judges in the Pentagon. So those people are responsible for reviewing this evidence. They're looking at the same evidence I'm looking at, the same record.
So
one of those generals needs to take, I think, a closer look at what's in there.
Well, this is good, and that's all because of your reporting and Lieutenant Goodrum's persistence.
That's right.
Well, you know, thank you. It's been great talking to you. Mark Benjamin, the national correspondent for Salon.com, thank you for being with us.
Thanks,
hey,
Mark.
I just saw Johnny K Street.
Uh-oh.
Yep, so stay tuned for that. Coming up next, we got Johnny K Street. Later in the show, we got Gary Sinise. Good stuff.
MorningSedition.com. Our guests, our comedy, your blog. MorningSedition.com. Air America Radio.
8:50 past the hour. Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
Gary Sinise is going to be in here a little while. Tomorrow I'll be hanging out with Eric Bogosian at the Strand Bookstore tomorrow morning if you want to come down and hang out with us, 6 to 9. That's the Strand Bookstore here in New York City, Broadway and 12th Street. We're going to have some fun down there. We're going to give away some tickets to see me in New Jersey. That's right. You come down the Strand, you can win two tickets for transportation to see me at Bananas Comedy Club in, where is it? Hasbrook Heights.
Hasbrook Heights. Don't forget the Heights.
Yeah, go to bananascomedyclub.com. Look, folks, there are a lot of stories out in the news this week, so it's time to get some bets down with our own Inside the Beltway odds maker, Johnny K Street. Johnny, where's the action, man?
It follows me, baby.
All right.
I got Howard Dean action.
Good.
The Democrats are all freaked out about Howard Dean.
Yeah.
They don't know what he's going to say next. Perfect time to lay off some action. You ready?
Yeah, I got it. What do you got?
100-1.
Uh-huh.
Howard Dean completely freaks out next week and calls the Republican Party a bunch of warmonging, big business, stroking, gay-bashing Nazis.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I'm in
on that. He also describes Bush's Christian followers as inbred, cross-burning, minority-hating hillbillies. He claims the GOP is responsible for 9-1-1, global warming, locust attacks, Brad Pitt and Jennifer Aniston breaking up, and kiddie porn.
Yeah!
Then he launches into an X-rated rant about Ann Coulter until Joe Biden tases him and he's tackled by Nancy Pelosi.
Wow.
Get your money
down. That's pretty specific, man.
That's not a bad bet when you think about it.
Yeah, okay, I got to admit, you're right. Put me down for 500, Johnny.
Hey, you know, Johnny, Dean's a wild card, but that's the point. He can flip out at any minute. I like the action on this one. Put me down for a grand.
There you go. Smart, I'm telling you. You know how to make money.
Yeah.
Speaking of loose cannons,
yeah.
I got Russell Crowe action.
Oh, yeah, what do you got?
21.
Okay.
Before the end of the year, Russell Crowe throws a housekeeper out the window of the plaza because the batteries are dead in his remote control. 50-1, it turns into a trend. Sean Penn beats a bellboy to death and sticks him in an ice maker. Then Colin Farrell throws a maid down a flight of stairs. They're not putting a mint on his pillow. I got you both down for 500 on this one. Problem?
No problem. Take it easy, man.
Right.
Take it easy. Wow, what else you got? Wait, what about Bush's approval ratings? You've got to have some action on that, John.
Do I? Bush's approval ratings are way down, as you know.
Uh-huh.
Bush is about as popular right now as the blue collar comedy tour Live at the Apollo. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do know what you mean.
Bush's rating is 45%. I'm taking action. It's going to drop to 25% by the end of July.
Uh-huh.
When the Washington Post breaks a story that Bush has been using prisoners from Guantanamo to work on his Crawford Ranch.
That's outsourcing.
Yeah. There's also a video of Bush, Cheney, and Gonzalez cooking a side of beef over a big burning pile of Korans and branding one of these guys. This is going off at 1,000-1. Now, off the record, I'm not saying I have inside information on this, and I'm not saying I don't. All I'm saying is put every single cent you have on this bet.
Uh-oh.
That's it. I'm out of here.
All right.
I got to go to court.
Of course
again?
You do.
Have fun at Bananas.
Yeah. That's not for a couple of weeks, but thanks, buddy.
Work in the big room.
I'm going to see you in a couple of days, right? No, next week I'll see you.
Good
luck in court, Johnny. Oh, boy. I guess that wasn't outsourcing. It was slave labor. Those guys working on the Crawford Ranch down there. Hey, Riley.
Yep.
So, Disney World.
Yeah.
Yeah, you looking forward to it now? It's going to be fun, right? Yeah? Huh? Come on.
Is my daughter going to school yet?
No, come on. You're going to love it.
Look, hey, it's okay.
I'll be honest with you. You're going to have a great time. So we've spent the morning talking about... I've been to Disneyland.
Oh, okay.
You know, I have a wife that likes to go there. I don't even have kids. She likes to go to Disneyland.
What's your favorite ride, Riley?
The ride home.
Oh, come on. Space Mountain?
No, I don't care. I don't know. I don't go on rides.
Oh, come on.
I'm telling you right now, you have to go on the Hollywood Tower Hotel.
You like that ride?
Oh, it's great.
You like that ride?
It's a free fall.
Yeah, I know.
I'm doing that.
He's never going to do that.
Wait a minute. Here, let me write my last will and testament now.
Here's what Riley's going to do at Disney World. Go out of this. That's it. Have a good time, honey.
Hi. Enjoy. I'm going back to the hotel.
He'll be waving at a lot of machinery as his wife and daughter fly around on different cars and things.
Are you staying in a hotel that's in the resort? You know,
in the resort, but not of the resort.
Okay, so it's like one of the all-star, you know, sports places.
No!
Like
no, it's one of the ordinary places. It's near downtown Disney, but it is not a Disney resort.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Speaking of fun, some guy got bitten by a shark off the coast of New Jersey. A surfer.
Yeah, I'm moving back to Manhattan.
But, you know, what's supposed to happen? Eventually, if you're out in the water on a surfboard in the ocean, you have there's an outside chance that a fish is going to bite you. You know what I mean? Now, the weird thing about this story is this guy didn't even know he got bitten, really. He just felt something tug on his leg, this surfer off the coast of Jersey, I believe. Wasn't it, or was it Long Island?
No, it was off the coast of New Jersey, someplace called Surf City, New Jersey.
And this is pretty unusual because a shark attack hasn't happened here in a long time. And I'll tell you one thing. I am still frightened of the ocean because of sharks.
Really?
Because of Jaws. I am still frightened because of Jaws. Still.
I'm scared of undertow, man. So undertow scares me a lot more than sharks.
Have you ever been caught in an undertow, dude?
I wouldn't be here
that
if
is
I had.
That's
some scary stuff. No. I've been to Rio, man. Rio, they take 2 people a day on the undertow down there.
Really?
Yeah!
Wow, that sounds like... You just made it sound like some sort of strange, evil god of the ocean.
Two people
a day have been swallowed up by the strange, evil god of the ocean.
Listen, I was scared. We were staying in a hotel that was right on the ocean, and a body floated up.
Get out of here, Riley.
I'm serious.
Oh, that's no fun.
I'm dead serious. A guy got caught in the undertow way, like 2 or 3 miles away.
So what, you're having a romantic morning, you wake up, you got a cup of coffee, you're like, wow, that's beautiful.
That's beautiful.
Wait a minute! What is that?
Did you poke it?
No.
I didn't get near it. I didn't get near it. But, I mean, everybody in the hotel knew it had happened.
That was spit out by the evil god of the ocean.
There you go.
I've been caught in an undertow before. It's pretty scary.
Yeah, it is.
Not a big one, but, you know, like, I was body surfing on Venice Beach in California once.
Yeah.
And I got sucked under. You know, when you just, for some reason, you don't really realize how powerful the ocean really is until you're like, you know, you're stuck underwater twirling and you can't get out.
Yeah,
it's
I know.
Horrendous.
It's a very scary thing. And somebody went missing here in New York recently.
Really?
Off Rockaway.
Oh, that's right. I remember that.
Yeah.
Oh, man, I'm not going anywhere.
I'm staying at the hotel pool myself.
Yeah, that guy. You know what I don't like? Even in deep pools, I don't like not knowing what's under me. If it's dark out and I'm in a pool, I still think that a shark could get in there. Is that weird?
It's a pool.
I know.
Yeah, I know.
Gary Sinise is going to be with us coming up next here on Air America Radio.
Morning Tradition on Air America Radio.
Blah, blah, blah. 6 past the hour, it's Morning Sedition. I'm Mark Maron, that's Mark Riley.
Yep.
You're listening to Air America Radio. We're going to have actor Gary Sinise on here in just a little while. You might know him as Captain Dan from Forrest Gump.
Lieutenant Dan.
Yeah, that's right. Lieutenant Dan, Captain.
Captain Dan.
Captain Dan Pashman, son of Lewis and Linda Pashman. Happy birthday, Lewis Pashman. You made it. Yeah, try and get a couple hours to yourself. Anyways, moving on, I will be at the Strand Bookstore tomorrow morning at 12th and Broadway, broadcasting this show while you're in Disney World. But don't worry, I'll be hanging out with Eric Bogosian. I'm going to have mayoral candidate C. Virginia Fields on. We got comedian Jim David. We're going to have coffee. We're going to have giveaways of tickets.
Swag, baby!
To see me, June 25th in New Jersey. Win a trip to New Jersey to see Mark Maron. Or go to bananascomedyclub.com.
I heard a rumor, too.
What's
his name supposed to be there tomorrow?
Who's that? Martin Small, I believe, will come
down.
Yes, he is. And I believe Sammy the Stem Cell will be there.
Oh,
and perhaps the liberal aggressor. You know that guy who calls the revolution.
Mm-hmm.
He's thinking about coming on. Look, let's get back into this. John Dean. No, not the Watergate guy. Howard Dean made some comments about the Republicans, which were true. They were true comments. All right, I'll quote him. Quote, pretty much a white Christian party, end quote. Quote, unfortunately, by and large, it is, and they have the agenda of the conservative Christians, unquote. Now, when I hear these things, I'm like, well, that sounds like our show, Riley. It sounds like he's just telling the truth, telling it like it is.
He's been podcasting.
Exactly. He's stealing our stuff.
Yeah.
But, you know, when other Democrats, people like Joe Biden, Nancy Pelosi, Governor Bill Richardson, people like John Edwards, when they hear this, they immediately start to say, well, he's not speaking for the whole party. I'm going to distance myself from him. Bill Richardson literally just said, look, you know, he should keep his powder dry, I think was the phrasing he used. We got a few years. But all these wussies, all these centricrats immediately create a rift within the Democratic Party because of this guy speaking his mind, whereas they should just be saying, oh, yeah, Howard does that.
Yeah.
Not giving the Republicans more ammo, not taking a stand on their own, or just letting us have a different variety of points of view within this party. I mean, no one honors the party's ideology in a more, succinct way than Howard Dean in a lot of respects. And he's free of the bonds that, force people to be politicking and careerist in terms of whether they're going to run for office. They should just thank Howard Dean and say, all right, that's Howard. Howard does his little thing, and, he says the truth, but, he does it in the Howard way.
Does this look like a party that is prepared to contest next year's off-year elections? That's all I care about.
I hope so.
I want to see some Democrats win.
Yeah.
And this kind of divisiveness does not create winning candidates. I don't care who they are. I don't care what the circumstances are. You all want to stampede to the center? Fine. Have a nice trip right if you get work.
Well, let's listen to what Howard Dean really said. Can we hear that, Chris?
The Republicans are not very friendly to different kinds of people. They're pretty monolithic party. They're pretty much, they all behave the same. And they all look the same. It's pretty much white Christian party.
Yeah, I mean, that is not...
Who was that? Jeff Gannon in the background scribbling?
Someone's sketching a picture. No, it's probably a mic on a reporter. But, it didn't sound that heinous to me. It sounded like he was just telling the truth. He was making a generalization. But so what? Just say, here's what you got to say. John Edwards, Nancy Pelosi, who was more diplomatic than the rest of them.
Yeah.
Bill Richardson. Here's what you got to say. You got to say, oh, yeah, Howard, he's Howard.
Yeah. He'll be Howard. Let him be Howard.
Did you hear this other Howard bit? This came out last night, and a lot of people, I don't know if they even heard this. I haven't heard any reaction to Howard Dean. This is last night, Howard Dean.
What the f*** happened to the adults I used to know? Where's the spirit? Where's the guts? This could be the greatest night of our lives. You're gonna let it be the worst.
Oh, we're afraid to go with you, Pluto. We might get in trouble.
Well, just kick my ass from now on! Not me! I'm not gonna take this!
Senator Joe Biden.
He's a dead man!
Senator John Edwards.
Dead!
Governor Bill Richardson.
Dead!
Yeah! Wow, I wonder how they're going to react to that. That's some heavy stuff there, wasn't it?
It was heavy stuff, but hey, man, it speaks to how this party is divided against itself, and if people aren't careful, the Democrats will be the minority party forever.
Come on, how hard is it? That's just Howard. How hard is that?
Yeah.
That's just Howard.
Or do what Hillary did, just walk by and don't say anything.
Yeah, that's fine, too.
They suck the mic in her face, and you don't hear any quotes from her.
Do you think they're trying to push him out, Riley?
I think they're trying to neuter him.
Uh-huh.
Not to
use
a canine reference, but I think they're trying to spay the man.
Yeah.
I think they're trying to make him kind of like almost irrelevant to the direction that the party's going in. And he cannot be that as chair of the party.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you. Now also the Republicans, see that's the thing, is that Republicans don't do this. Bill Frist comes out, says he's going to use the nuclear option. Tom DeLay comes out, kisses all kinds of, extreme right evangelical butt. And, they don't say anything. They just put them on the shelf for a little while.
Or they say, I respectfully disagree.
Yeah, but it's just the thing is like, that's just Howard. How hard is that? That's just Howard.
Mm-hmm.
Howard has a different way of approaching how he speaks. That's all. He's one of us. This administration is heinous. This whole thing about them trying to get $45 million back from the families and victims of 9/11 creeps me out.
Over
creeps
some
out.
Technical, you didn't put it out through the right agency stuff. You didn't follow instructions from Congress. Come on! These are people who have suffered. These are people who have, had their lives totally disrupted by their service at Ground
Right.
Zero.
And the government of New York had it distributed through other agencies in order to get it out in a timely fashion,
yep.
Get it out quick. And the GAO had said that was not the agreement with Congress in terms of distributing the money. They also want to take back $125 million that was allotted for worker compensation here in New York. And it's not spent yet. That's because New York has some foresight. You can't have the money back just because it's spent. That's ridiculous, and you should be ashamed of yourself for asking for it. We had a lot of people in this city working down there at Ground Zero in very toxic, toxic environment, and they, who knows what the hell is going to happen to them in a few years, what health repercussions are that. Why don't you just let us hold on to that money just in case we need to dull that out if some of these guys and women have health issues revolving around what you said was an environmentally safe environment. That air was toxic, and we need to just see what happens with that.
What happened to all the politicians that were down there glad-handing everybody in the immediate aftermath of September 11th, telling everybody what a great job they did, including, by the way, the President of the United States who went down there and posed with firemen? You're going to take the money out of the hands of families of those same firemen now? What's wrong with you?
Yeah, and also now, you know, Bush, apparently, Tony Blair says, come on, the most important thing, this, of course, you know, less than 2 weeks after the Downing Street memo was revealed, says that the real important issue is greenhouse gases, which it is, but it would have been nice for him to address the Downing Street memo with a little more specificity, you know, a little more in depth than just, you know, what were they going to do, cop to it, cop to the fact that they were in cahoots with manipulating information in order to move on into Iraq without any real reason. But the truth of the matter is now, Blair is saying that, you know, global warming is the most important thing, and he asked President Bush, can you kick in a little on this? Can we make a deal here and get some money going? And I guess Bush said, well, not until we, you know, take the money out of the hands of the families of 9/11, then we can give you that money.
It's incredible. A 5% reduction in greenhouse gases by 2012, and the United States cannot even agree to that. 5%!
Unbelievable. It's unbelievable. Yeah, and then they had this guy within the administration, the guy they put in charge.
Cooney.
Phil Cooney, of crunching the numbers, an ex-petroleum industry lobbyist, of sort of crunching the numbers and editing and revising the reports that come out from the scientific community in relation to the human cause, the industrial causes of global warming, which has been pretty, you know, they have the science that has heavily indicated that that is the case. So they get a petroleum industry lobbyist in to do the job of editing the reports, of summarizing them by, you know, actually putting language into them that that denies and or makes it less the threat of industry on the planet.
Well, yeah, and what this guy did was change little words so that there was some doubt about whether or not greenhouse gases, in fact, because, you know, Bush does not believe, Mark, that greenhouse gases actually are causing global warming, and he's got, I don't know whether they're scientists, quacks, or whatever, who agree with him. No, there's no big problem.
He must think it's God's will.
Yeah, exactly.
The end must come, so let it come now, and let my friends make a lot of money during these end days. Looks like we got a... Looks like we got a few calls on the line, so maybe we'll talk to you next. It's 16 past the hour, Air America Radio. Gary Sinise is on his way over here. 16 past the hour, Air America Radio.
Join the morning sedition. Right now, call 866-303-2270.
What?
That's 866-303-2270.
You don't know until you've tried this.
Morning sedition on Air America Radio.
Damn good.
Come on, is my phone ringing?
Hello?
20 past the hour, Air America Radio. I'm Mark Maron, that's Mark Riley.
Hi.
You're listening to Morning's Edition, and that's Axel F., right? A frog?
Crazy Frog, Axel.
Crazy Frog, Axel F., which is 2 weeks in a row has beat Coldplay. Coldplay single, you know, for the best-selling single in Britain.
Yep.
I can see why. You wouldn't want to have Coldplay as your ringer.
No.
Because every time the phone rings, you're like, oh, it's got to be bad news. Something sad has happened.
And this is positive and upbeat, this one.
Sure is. But if I heard this on a train, I'd be like, what is your problem? Come on, grow up. Why can't I just use a ring? You know what I mean? I just used a ring. I'm going to buy an iPod this weekend, I think.
Oh, God, not again.
It doesn't even matter
anymore.
Okay.
It's been a couple months, this conversation.
But, hey, I haven't eaten meat since, March 1st? That's pretty amazing.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm concerned about my cholesterol, though, because I eat a lot of cheese. That's the backside of it, you know? It's a back part.
Something wrong with cheese?
I don't know. It's bad. Doesn't cheese just get stuck in your heart valve? Like,
no.
Cheese?
That's your intestine.
It is?
Yeah.
All right. I hope you're right. All right, so sometimes when you read the headlines, it can be tough to figure out just exactly what the mainstream media is saying. Thank God we got this machine that we got. I got to box this thing up today and, you know, to bring it down the Strand tomorrow, Broadway and 12th. I'm going to be doing the show. Sands Riley, who will be in Disney World.
Sands?
Doesn't that mean without? S-A-N-S, am I right?
Oh, Sands. Okay.
Yeah. Did you think it was a nickname?
No, I didn't.
All right, so let's read this thing some headlines. What do you say? That's the Wi-Fi headline translator 5000 thing, if you just listening for the first time to our show. I'm going to feed it some headlines to translate them. From the New York Times, Rumsfeld says Guantanamo isn't being considered for closing. Or Rumsfeld says Guantanamo isn't being considered for closing. Translation, Rumsfeld doesn't rule out renovations. Gitmo to add private buddy boots. All right, from Fox News, Viagra ingredient approved for lung problems. Viagra ingredient approved for lung problem. Translation, in and out drug to aid breathing in and out.
Yeah, it's a sexy joke, sex stuff. Woohoo!
From ABC News, Tyson back to old self at press conference. Tyson back to old self at press conference. Translation, Robin Givens missing, police fear the worst. It seems like our conversation about Howard Dean speaking his mind and the rest of the Democrat careerists, the centrocrats, like Bill Richardson, like Joe Biden, like John Edwards, Nancy Pelosi, a little different, more diplomatic than the rest of all are like, oh, he's not speaking for all of us. Yeah, I hear with that guy, you know. What? Hey, what's so hard about saying, yeah, Howard does that sometimes. Howard does that sometimes. What's so hard about that? Apparently, people have gotten sort of worked up about this. Can we take a call here? I don't got a name on this first one. Do you? Hello. How are you?
Good morning.
Oh, there you go. Brian, what's going on in New York? How are you, Brian? Yeah?
Brian?
Okay. How about that? Brian, you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay. What's going on? What's on your mind?
Oh, man. What's on my mind? Let me tell you what's on my mind. I'm sick and tired of these DLC pandering right-leaning Democrats in name only bitching and moaning about Howard Dean because he's not kissing ass to the K Street lobbyists that
right.
are funding them.
Yes, we are too.
You know, Howard Dean showed that there are people who are interested in supporting progressive politics and that people can get elected or at least get voters and volunteers behind them without having corporations pay for it. Now that the other people in the Democratic Party see that he's actually getting somewhere with it and that for the first time practically ever, a DNC chairman was elected without a backroom deal being made, which James Carville, the freaking Cobra, lamented live on CNN, which was unbelievable.
Right.
And now that he's actually got people behind him and he's raising money in record numbers, which is being lied about in the media because they're saying that he's losing fundraisers, which are paid positions anyway, the people who are in the established Democratic circles are scared they're going to lose their influence. And you know what? They are.
Okay. Thanks for your thoughts, man. Brian's
wow.
worked up.
You've got some vim and vigor there.
Yeah, I'll tell you, I agree with him because this idea that there's a concern whether or not, you know, he's appealing to the, you know, to the big money, you know, corporate backers of the Democratic Party, it's like he's reaching out on a grassroots level. He is making a lot of money on the grassroots level. And you know what? Those big fund, those big money people, those corporate backers of the Democratic Party, they'll be there. They'll be there 2 years from now. They'll be there when the time comes. You don't have to pander them immediately all the time.
They don't have to be wet nursed by
yeah.
Howard Dean.
That's right.
What
That's
kind
exactly
of nonsense
right.
is this?
Scott, listening to Sirius in Virginia. How are you, Scott?
What's up, Scott?
Hey, guys.
What's on your mind, man?
I think the problem is that Biden, Pelosi, Edwards all think that their opinion is more important than party unity.
Their career, certainly.
They need to learn to bloviate like the Republicans do and say anything but fall into the trap of what the reporters want to hear.
Right. Fall into the trap of what the reporters want to hear and contradict their own party.
Right.
Exactly.
They should say, it's a beautiful day out, isn't it, and go on.
Yeah. But see, that's
they
the
should
thing
probably dial it up a little bit.
Yeah, maybe. But, you know, that's the thing that bothers
Thanks for your
me.
Thanks Scott. Yeah.
It's these people, these are politicians. They know the impact of their words. When they distance themselves from Howard Dean, that is a cold, calculated political move.
They're not reacting from emotion to what Howard Dean said.
Right. It's only got two intentions, either to, you know, further their own career or to push Howard Dean out.
Yep.
And I say, look, you know, how about some unity? You don't see the Republicans behaving like this. How hard is it? How hard is it, John Edwards, to say, yeah, Howard, that he does that? How hard is it? How hard is it, Joe Biden? Yeah, you know, Howard, you know, he gets a little excited sometimes. How hard is that?
Well, hey, man, you know, every now and then folks stray off the ranch, off the plantation, or wherever they're...
On their own horse for their own purpose.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're saying.
Sheila Jackson Lee, the one that stood up.
Good for her, man.
Yeah.
So Lieutenant Dan is going to be here. Gary Sinise is doing some rock and roll music. He's playing bass in a band called the Lieutenant Dan Band to benefit Iraqi children.
That's right. We'll hear about it next on Air America Radio.
Tradition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Past the hour, Mark Maron, that's Mark Riley.
Yo.
It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. In studio with us now, you might know him as Lieutenant Dan, who was a co-star with Tom Hanks and Forrest Gump. You can see him in the hit TV series CSI New York. He's made several trips to Iraq and started Operation Iraqi Children to help school kids, and he plays bass guitar with the Lieutenant Dan Band.
Yeah.
And will be performing, that's tonight, I believe. We'll be playing tomorrow night at the Bowery Ballroom to benefit Wounded American Soldiers. For tickets, you can go to BoweryBallroom.com or call TicketWeb at 866-468-7619. Also, you're going to be in Chicago Saturday night at Park West playing to benefit the Pentagon Memorial Fund. Welcome, Gary Sinise. Pleasure to be sitting here with you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thanks for coming in.
So you're a bass player, huh?
Yeah. I actually played in bands way before I was an actor. I had my first guitar in fourth grade, played in bands all through high school, started acting in high school. Played until I was in my early 20s, kind of regularly, and then the theater company took over, and acting kind of became the priority, and I didn't play for a while. Just the last 5 or 6 years that I've started playing again.
Well, I think you made the right choice, I think, it seems to me, by your acting career. I mean, I don't know how you play. I haven't heard a lot of your music, but it seems to me that you've done all right with the acting thing.
Yeah, I've been fortunate.
Where'd you grow up? I'm curious about, you know, like how you got nurtured musically.
I grew up in Chicago.
Okay.
Play
a lot of Muddy Waters and stuff?
Yeah, well, Buddy Guy and all that, sure, you know. But, you know, I grew up on Hendrix and Zeppelin, really.
Ooh.
Yay, Zeppelin!
Ooh, Hendrix. Yeah. I went to the Band of Gypsies on New Year's Eve.
No kidding.
Yeah, man, that was an experience.
Right, old.
Yeah, I am.
Well,
I ain't dead. Don't
our guitar player saw Hendrix, too.
It's quite an experience, especially if he wasn't stoned.
So, now... You take the band. You've been to Iraq a couple times with the band, or not with Iraq,
no,
on your own?
No, the band hasn't gone. The band. I started taking the band with me after I went to Iraq. I went there twice.
Mm-hmm.
Once in June of 2003, and then I went back in November of 2003, and I went to Germany and Italy, and I did a bunch of different USO tours on my own. And then I asked, I had these players that I play with, and I asked the USO if they'd let me take them out with me to do a tour for the troops. And we ended up going to Korea and Singapore and down to Diego Garcia. It's this island in the middle of the Indian Ocean. Nobody ever goes down there. It's like Gilligan's Island down there.
So when you went initially, when it was just you, what would you do? Would you do characters? Would you wave? Would you just
what do you do? Monologue?
Did you travel with comedians? Were there a bunch of you?
Well, on the first tour, there it was huge.
Okay.
I mean, I went over on a 747 that was just for this tour. Northwest Airlines donated a 747. They took 180 people over there, including Kid Rock, Leanne Womack, Wayne Newton, all the
you're all in the
Paul
same
Rodriguez,
plane together.
Paul, wow. It was like the love boat. I mean, it was crazy.
It's like Air Ego.
Yeah,
Oh my god,
it was insane. You know, there were like craps games going on the floor.
Wayne Newton ran that.
You know,
just
Kid
Wayne...
Rock was running that.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah.
Just seeing Wayne Newton up close would make me nervous.
Wayne, I've been on four different USO things with Wayne.
He's a hell of an entertainer, right? That's what they say.
He really is, and he puts on a great show, and he's a good guy.
As my mother once said, he plays all the instruments.
Well, he plays what he does, like something like 13 instruments.
That's my mom's biggest.
He plays
problem.
Them all within, you know, about 45 minutes, too, in the show.
I just pictured you what he said. I do monologues. He's like, this is the character Austin, which I originated with Steppenwolf Theater Company, just to see the guys. What happened?
They'd look at me in shock.
Yeah, like,
you know?
Why are you doing Shakespeare?
Yeah, actually, you just shake hands and get your picture taken. And there were a lot of actors on this first tour. Robert De Niro was on the tour, and
he just
got his picture taken and, you know, walked around and shook hands and whatnot. We went into Baghdad with a small group of people. He was one of them.
Mm-hmm.
I went to Baghdad twice on that tour. Went one day and we were just at the airport. We did a big concert inside this giant hangar.
Mm-hmm.
For 7,000 troops and about 140 degrees in there. And then the next day we went back with a smaller group and they took us into downtown Baghdad and went to some palaces and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
Saw a lot of troops there.
Gary Sinise, you've obviously been drawn to two issues with regard to Iraq, wounded soldiers and Iraqi children. Tell us how that evolved for you.
Well, you know, I was involved with veterans for quite a long time, even before Forrest Gump, where I played Lieutenant Dan, a disabled vet. I was involved with Vietnam veterans. I have a lot of Vietnam veteran pals. I worked on some material in the theater and got to know a lot of Vietnam veterans. And then Forrest Gump came along. I played this wonderful character, Lieutenant Dan, a disabled veteran. Then I got involved with the disabled American veterans. And when we started going into Afghanistan and whatnot, I called the USO and volunteered and said, what can I do to help the troops out? And then I recently saw this on television, these guys who started Soldier Ride and the Wounded Warrior Project, and they're out there trying to help our wounded soldiers out.
Sure.
So I called them up and I said, what can I do to help you guys? Can I bring my band into New York and we'll do a benefit concert for you? And so we've worked up this benefit. We're going to be at the Bowery Ballroom tomorrow night, and it's to help raise money for the Wounded Warrior Project and Soldier Ride, which... Soldier Ride is, right now there's a cross-country bicycle ride going on with wounded soldiers riding across country. They're going to end up in Montauk, I think, in July. And they're just out there to show that that these guys, you know, are going to go on. And we're trying to bring some attention to them and help raise some money for them. With the Iraqi Children Project, I went to some Iraqi schools and visited some of the schools that the troops had rebuilt.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, what you don't see on the news every day is the positive things that are going on there, the helpful things that the troops are doing with the Iraqi people. And I saw some of that.
Mm-hmm.
Something like 600 schools have been, brand new schools have been built by the Army Corps of Engineers. They have another 879 schools that are on the agenda to build over there. And so we're trying to send them supplies so that they can take these supplies out and give them to the kids. And we have a wonderful program called Operation Iraqi Children. You can go to OperationIraqiChildren.org, and you can find out about it because people from all over our country are sending us school supplies, pencils and paper. And
that's great.
We send them to the troops, and they take them out and give them to the kids.
It's interesting because as many journalists as we have on who have spent time in Baghdad and actually been, you know, in the war zones themselves, they've always said that as bad as it gets, that there are a lot of things that are going on. It's good to hear that the schools are being built and some good things are happening.
Yeah, and it seems as though that a lot of the soldiers really want to do that work.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that's what doesn't get translated well.
Unfortunately, the media is going to show you the bombings every day, and they're going to always be the more dramatic thing. If you have a Humvee burning on one side of the street and you have some little kids getting some Beanie Babies on the other, they're going to show you the Humvee and forget about the little kids. But those things are happening over there every day. I'm in touch with probably 24 people in Iraq on a daily basis, soldiers, civilians, people that are working very, very hard over there doing wonderful things.
It's interesting what they don't cover. They don't cover the good things, and they also don't cover the bad things that this administration is doing to the soldiers in terms of equipment and that kind of stuff.
I have another perspective on that because I'm in touch with several people that actually are in charge of a lot of that equipment. Mm-hmm. They have a different perspective on that. They say that they're, you know, our soldiers have the armor and they have
they're re-equipped.
I sent one guy who's in charge of a lot of this stuff an article saying that we're not arming, you know, we're not giving our soldiers the equipment. He wrote back and said, you know, here's a different perspective. I'm in charge of a lot of that equipment for the Marines and everybody's got body armor. So they've corrected
some of it.
They work all the time on correcting these things.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you know, that's one guy in charge of one area, but he's making sure that everybody has what they need.
Right.
And they're sending a lot of that stuff over there that you never hear about it.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So now what kind of songs do you guys play? You do originals or you do mostly covers?
It's all covers.
You're playing it safe. You know what it is. Here's an emotional one that I wrote.
Well, we actually do have one original song that one of the singers wrote, and it's kind of dedicated to the troops. She plays that. But, you know, I put the band together to play for the troops and to give them a little bit of home. So we play from country, pop, rock, blues.
What's on the set list?
What are
the favorite ones you like to play, or the best songs? Like which one is, like, comes up and you're like, oh, good.
I like all the tunes we play. I love playing Another Star by Stevie Wonder. Uh-huh. I love playing Purple Haze by Jimi Hendrix.
Playing it now.
We play, you know, the band Lone Star. We play some tunes by Lone Star.
I do know. Is she have a female singer? Is there a female?
No, no. This is a country band. So we play some country tunes that they do. We do Keith Urban. We do his tune called Days Go By. We do Beyonce. We cover this.
We're talking to Gary Sinise. His band, the Lieutenant Dan Band, will be playing at the Bowery Ballroom tomorrow night to benefit wounded American soldiers. For tickets, go to BoweryBallroom.com or call TicketWeb at 866-468-7619. They'll also be in Chicago Saturday night at Park West playing to benefit the Pentagon Memorial Fund. Can we talk a little bit about theater and films when we come back?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, we'll continue this conversation with Gary Sinise coming up here on Air America Radio.
MorningSedition.com. Our guests, our comedy, your blog. MorningSedition.com. Air America Radio.
Past the hour, let's land this thing. It's Mark Maron here. Well, I'm here with Mark Riley. It's Morning Tradition on Air America Radio.
Yeah.
We're talking to a rock musician and actor, Gary Sinise. you know him as Lieutenant Dan in Forrest Gump. He's on the hit series CSI New York. He's also going to be playing with the Lieutenant Dan Band at the Bowery Ballroom tomorrow night to benefit wounded American soldiers. For tickets, go to BoweryBallroom.com or call TicketWeb at 866-468-7619. They'll also be in Chicago Saturday night at Park West playing to benefit the Pentagon Memorial Fund, and that is rock
and remember.org.
If you're interested in going to see that show, we've been talking a lot about what he's doing for Iraqi children and touring Iraq. Now I want to shift gears a little bit and talk about the Steppenwolf Theater Company, which you were a creator of, part of the originating cast of that?
Founder, yeah.
You're the founder.
Yeah, founder.
The guys who came out of that, the women and men, the actors that came out of that, what, Joan Allen, John Malkovich, and who else is in there?
Oh, gosh, my wife Moira, John Mahoney.
John Mahoney, he's great.
Laurie Metcalf.
I can't believe how many talented people came out of that theater company. It's just mind-blowing.
We've got a great Great group, yeah.
It was now, what was the ideology of the group? Because I've read Maloney. I've read some stuff that he's written. John Maloney has in interviews talked about it, and John Malkovich. Was it fueled by rage or initially? The very intense actors came out of there.
We were stuck in a basement for quite a while in the beginning. We had this little basement theater in the basement of a Catholic school. They just let us have this basically for $1 a year and gave it, I guess it was a tax write-off for them. They gave it to these young people, and we were down there just doing plays and doing our own thing. And we had a very kind of aggressive, Taxi Driver was one of my favorite movies at that time. And, we had Pacino and Dog Day Afternoon and all these things. And, we were very very much influenced by some of the movies of the 70s that we were digging. And, that's the kind of acting we wanted to do.
It was, were you the first to play Austin in True West?
No, that was done originally in San Francisco.
Okay.
Then it was done here in New York.
Okay.
At the Public Theater with Peter Boyle and Tommy Lee Jones.
Oh, okay.
And then 2 years later, we did it in Chicago, and it was a big hit there, so we moved it here. And it was a big hit.
It was you and Malkovich?
Malkovich was in it, and that kind of catapulted him into the movie business.
Are you guys still friends?
Yeah, sure.
I can't even, I'd love to be able to just talk to John Malkovich on the phone for 5 minutes. Wouldn't that be intense?
Interesting, interesting conversation, I'm sure.
So let's talk about, I saw, you directed Barry Child here in New York on Broadway, and I saw it, and it was a brilliant production. It was beautiful, and it was just great.
Thank you.
Yes. And I saw it a night. It was a very weird thing because the night I saw it, not only did I have a weird experience, because it got critically raves, but people didn't understand it. Like mainstream, I was in a lobby with this woman who's like, I don't get this. I have no idea what's happening. And the night I saw it, there's a scene where I forget what's the main character's name. He comes in with the corn.
Tilden.
And Tilden comes in. Well, who's the actor who played that guy?
Gary Kinney.
He's great.
Yeah, he's one of my best pals.
He's a great actor.
He's a co-founder of Steppenwolf.
He was great in The Firm.
That's right.
Well, he comes in with the corn. There's a scene where he drops all this corn on the floor. And the night I was there, one of these ears of corn just slowly started to roll towards the lip of the stage. And there was a moment where I'm like, oh, my God, the entire production has been upstaged by the corn. It's like it all it took was just little people were like, oh, what's going to happen with the corn?
Yeah, we're not above a little corn.
Oh, yeah. I love when things like that happen, but no one responded to it. Like, if I were on stage, I wouldn't be like, hey, let's get the corn. I'm being upstaged by corn.
And his character is not one who can run after the corn and get it. He's very slow. He doesn't think about rolling corn.
So now you're up to your neck in a TV series. Do you miss doing stuff like that, theater and directing and that kind of stuff? Do you have time for that?
The last play I did was actually I acted in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. And
it was here.
Finished here in 2001. Yeah, and that was. And then I'm busy with the TV series. It looks like I'm not going to get a chance to do theater for a while if the show keeps going. But
which is good.
This is another phase. I've done a lot of plays, and I'll get back to it at a certain point. The TV series is just kind of feels like the right thing at the right time.
It must be nice to work every day, too. I mean, I did stand-up comedy before this, and when you do stage work, a lot of times, or movie work, and you don't know when the next one's going to start, and with TV, you're working, right?
Well, at least now it looks like our show's going to go for a while, so we at least know we're going to have another season.
Now, when do you start production? It's soon, huh?
July 11th.
July.
I'll start shooting again.
And you do, it's bi-coastal? You end up shooting in both New York and on the West Coast?
Well, last season we shot here once. This season we hope to come here 2 or 3 times. But we shoot mostly in Los Angeles. I hope we can come to New York, at least
twice.
Come
on back to the greatest city in the world.
We want to do more here.
So at least shoot an opening. You know what I mean?
I don't know. I think we'll be back actually by September, hopefully.
Well, you're going to be at the Bowery Ballroom tomorrow night with your band, the Lieutenant Dan Band at the Bowery Ballroom tomorrow night.
Can I just mention why it's called the Lieutenant Dan Band?
Okay.
Well, our band plays for the troops all the time. I do a lot for the USO, as I said, and they're always calling me Lieutenant Dan from Forrest Gump. So and kind of in their honor, I just went ahead and named the band.
Named the band.
You can go to BoweryBallroom.com or call Ticket Web at 866-468-7619 for tomorrow's show, and they'll be in Chicago Saturday night at Park West playing to benefit the Pentagon Memorial Fund, which is
rockandremember.org.
It's great talking to you, Gary Sinise. I really appreciate
Fantastic.
You being here.
Thanks
great to
lot.
Be here. Thanks for having me.
For those of you who are just tuning in, here are a few highlights of what we talked about on the program. It's time for today's Morning Sedition Cliff Notes. Tony Blair told President Bush that global warming is biggest issue facing the planet. Blair's views are diametrically opposed to President Bush's, who says the biggest challenge facing us is, quote, evil and stuff. Bush responded by saying, Blair is with the terrorists. An Israeli researcher concluded that Jesus died of a blood clot. Dozens of Catholic institutions are considering changing their names to Holy Blood Clots of Christ High School. Mel Gibson is inserting a special animated sequence into The Passion of the Christ, showing the blood clot's progress into Jesus' lungs. The sequence will also prove that the blood clot was a heartless Jew.
Okay. Yes, CSI.
Here's today's phrase, just dropping into conversation. So what if conservatives are insinuating that Hillary Clinton is a lesbian? Wake up, sheeple. At least you won't be like George Bush, always shoving things under the carpet.
Oh,
is that wrong? Hey. Thanks a lot, Gary Sinise. Good to see you here. Tomorrow I'll be at the Strand Bookstore at Broadway and 12th with Eric Bogosian, C. Virginia
Fields.
Mayoral, and you'll be in Disney World.
Hey, what can I tell you?
Good show. You too.
Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition. Air America Radio.